Okay. All right. So now we're going to welcome our speaker. It is my privilege to introduce him. His name's Robert. He comes from Fresno. So let's give him a warm Valley Group welcome.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Robert. I'm an alcoholic. Probably the most profound words I've ever said in my life was that my name and that I was an alcoholic. Welcome to the newcomers. It's big, you know. First day is big. A couple of housekeeping things. My sobriety date is September 9th of 2005. I have a home group, which is a village group in Fresno, California. We meet twice a week. I have a sponsor. His name is Jose. He has a sponsor. And I think Fred has a sponsor as well. The reason I say those things is because they were important to me. You know, as one of the readings was being read earlier, it talks about that one alcoholic talking to another. And that is what I have found to be one of the most profound things in my sobriety. And so it's really important to me. I also like the part when it talks about taking a trip or not taking a trip, because that was my experience. You know, it didn't matter what was going on. I love to drink. I'm from a little, it's funny when she said, where are you from? You know, it's always an interesting question to me. I'm from Cupertino, California. I lived in one house from 0 to 18. The first one I don't remember because I was probably a year old. I was born in San Francisco, moved to Cupertino. So I lived in one house from 0 to 18, and I had 23 known addresses from 18 to 40. And so where am I from? It's a great question. One of those, two of those addresses is actually Visalia, California, and we'll get onto that a little bit later on. But, you know, I started drinking. I come from a normal family that I consider normal. I had a lot of love growing up, you know. I wasn't emotionally, physically, mentally, or sexually abused. And the reason I say that is because it's not everybody's story, but it's my story. So I didn't have a lot of reasons to go out at the age of 12 to 13 years old and start drinking and checking out. But I did. I remember it was between 7th and 8th grade and junior high. And then we started drinking at 8th grade dances, which is really a trip for me because I'm now married. And so I have two daughters, and they're 12 and 15. And I took the 12-year-old last week to her first junior high dance. You know, and I think to myself, what conditions in your life were so bad that's what I did, you know, that's what I needed. And I don't really know what those answers were, you know, except I tried something. And I had a lot of training being good in life. I was raised with a good mother and father. They taught me the difference between right and wrong. So I had a lot of training in being good, and that didn't always stick, you know. I didn't need any training in being bad. I mean, I just took to that to like fish to water, you know. But I played a lot of sports before that, and I don't know if that's where I used to get a lot of that release from, you know. I think the best story I can tell there is I think in 7th grade I was most athletic in my junior high school. In 8th grade I was most improved in cross country. And I don't know how you get from there to there, because there was no injuries, except there was just a great right turn, and it had to do with drinking, and it had to do with at that time some weed, you know, and I'll keep the story to alcohol. There were other substances involved, but my primary and my first love has always been alcohol. And we used to call them suicides before the junior high dances. So we used to get a mason jar and just put everything in the cabinet, you know. So you got vodka, you got gin, you got slow gin. Somehow there was always some cream de menthe involved somewhere, you know. And so I have to believe that it didn't taste good. But I have to believe that it sure got me from that, you know, 4'7", 70-pound kid that was so full of fear. And I didn't care anymore, you know. I just didn't care. And that was a long line of drinking. I mean, all through high school. In my 20s, I mean, I started when I was in between 12 and 13, and I took my last drink at the age of 40. And so it was 28 years of really complete and utter insanity, you know. I told you that I moved 23 times. The only thing I always forgot is every time I moved, there I was, you know. And so I could never leave me. And so I tried the geographics. But it was kind of strange because at the age of... I got a DUI when I was 18. I got a DUI when I was 21. I got a DUI when I was 30, you know. That one really didn't count because I was kind of out of state. And so I don't know. What it did cost me is my career, though. That's what that one cost me. And then I had a lot of run-ins with the law later on. The great thing is, my home group, I have a lot of friends. And you know, there's people, I was counting the other night, you know. And I stopped counting after a while, but there was like five people or six people that got sober in their 20s. You know, there was five or six people that got sober in their 30s. There was five or six people that got sober in their 40s, in their 50s, in their 60s. Okay? And so the great thing is, you know, again, I'd like to welcome you because if you're here, it's probably a good time that you're here. And my experience is when I got here, it was a good time to be here. You know, during that time, I never really had a playbook on life. You know, I mean, after high school, I got a job. I got a good job. During that job, I met a woman, and we got married. Well, we had a kid. Then we got married. A son, Sean, and then we had another son. But I seemed like I was always like making life up as I went, you know, and not doing necessarily a very good job at it. During that time, I traveled a lot for work, and you put a 26-year-old on the road, you know, you put this 26-year-old on the road, away from home, away from the wife, away from the kids. And I can just tell you, it was, you know, the incomprehensible demoralization that the book talks about, that I've discussed that with my sponsor. And that's what it was, you know. I lost all that. I had everything I wanted in life. The job, the house, the car, the wife, the kids, the family. By the time I was 26, 27. And I can tell you it was all gone by the age of 30. And so I can tell you between the ages of 30, because for a guy like me, that's the one thing I never wanted. You know, I had a good childhood, but I did come from a broken family. I said I'd never do that. Well, that eventually happened. And so being out there on my own after losing all of that, losing it or trading it or whatever you want to describe it as, okay? The next 10 years between 30 and 40 were absolute utter hell, you know. They were that merry-go-round, is all I can tell you. It was that merry-go-round that just kept spinning. What I didn't realize, you know, I didn't realize I was in the grips of a progressive disease for me, that when I took that first drink, I had no other decisions to make. I couldn't make any decisions because, you know, my intention was never, I always had great intentions, and my intentions were not to be the husband, the father, the son, the brother that I was. You know, it wasn't always like that, but it sure was my reality at the time. Without getting into a whole lot more with that, I mean, at the age of 40, I got in some trouble with the police again. And a lot of those friends who got sober, I'll go back, you know, my story includes the law. Not everybody's does. Some of my best friends, theirs doesn't, you know, but mine does. But again, I got in trouble again. So I got a good job working here in Visalia. It's always crazy when I see sober people in Visalia. I love it, okay? Because that is not what I know. I came from the mountains up north of Santa Rosa, and I was working with a stepbrother of mine. We were building decks in the mountain, and I got a call from a friend of mine who said, I'll get you a job in Visalia. And I said, okay. I really wasn't drinking a whole lot at the time. I was probably smoking more weed because alcohol was my problem. I mean, looking back, I didn't really know that alcoholism or alcohol was my problem until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Before then, everything was always my solution. You know, all my problems, I had a lot of problems, and all my problems were always dealt with alcohol. You know, and ad infinitum. That's how I dealt with everything. And so I came down here, and I was actually in Tulare. I remember staying at a hotel, and I don't know if you've ever played that game with yourself, I'm not going to do it, but I was staying in a hotel. You know, some of those hotels give you, like, little pieces of paper that says free drinks, you know, for staying there. And I think, like, the first two nights I didn't do it. And then I got a beer, and then So I found this little place called, I think it was Froggy's. I don't know if the place is still here in Fresno.
Still there.
But see, Froggy's was okay because at the time it wasn't hard liquor. It was only beer and wine, I think. And so I felt safe there for a moment, you know. That moment didn't last very long. Then I found the Santa Fe. But you know, like three times in my life, I've lost everything and built everything up again. Lost everything and built everything up again. This time, and my experience is, you know, it took longer to tear it down, shorter to tear it down, and longer to build it back up again. And I can tell you that last time, it'd probably taken 4 or 5 years to build it back up, and it'd taken all of about 4 months to tear it back down again to absolutely ground zero. And so I'd gotten some trouble. I mean, I couldn't. So I was between here and Lemoore is what I was. Between here and Lemoore. And I've been homeless like three times in my life. And I always like to say, not homeless like homeless, you know. I just didn't have a place to go. So that involves some couch surfing. It involves a couple of nights on the park bench by yourself, you know, the sprinklers coming on. Not weeks and months at a time. You know, and being homeless wasn't really bad. What I found is being homeless and carless. Now that is not a good situation. And towards the end, what I would do is, after I'd lost my job, I'd basically drive up to Tatchy Palace. And what I would do is I would sleep in my car because I figured there was cameras. I wasn't going to get killed. And most of my troubles always seem to come in the wintertime. That I can tell you, because it's cold in the wintertime. Everywhere I've ever been, I've never been homeless in Santa Monica, but I have picked some places like Visalia, Lemoore, Rio Linda, some of the, you know, it is cold in the wintertime. And, but what I would do is I'd take my car and I'd drive up there. And it'd be so cold I'd turn my car on. And I'd wake up and it'd be so hot I'd have to turn my car off. And I would play this on and off game all night long. Until the police took that car. And so I had a couple of things going on in Lemoore. And I went in front of the judge. And he said, we're going to give you Prop 36. It was my first introduction. And somehow I asked him, I said, can I do that in another county? Because what the one thing I've realized throughout my entire life, and this has worked in my as a negative and it's worked as a positive, is at times I can be a very, very easily influential individual. You know, we're going to do what you have or I have, and we're going to do it till it's gone. Okay? And so I thought, you know, for all the other geographics, this might be the one. So I called my sister, who lives in Fresno, and I said, can I stay with you? And she said, yeah. And, you know, and that's, okay, so at the age of 40, you're calling your sister, asking her if you can stay with her. And she said, yeah. So what I did is I walked from the house I was living to the casino bus here in Visalia. I figured the only way I know how to get to Fresno, so I'm going to take the casino bus to Lemoore. And then I'm going to talk to the driver and see if I can go from Lemoore. Because they really don't like to do that. They like to take you and drop you off at the same place that you came from. It's not like a Greyhound service. But he let me do it, you know. All I can tell you is a trip from here to Fresno via Lemoore, for an alcoholic like me, takes about 3 days. About 3 days. You know? Hey, I'm not going to make that bus. I'll be on the next one. And I'll be on the next one. And I'll be on the next one. So ad infinitum of broken promises. Probably one of the most difficult things for me during that whole period of the last 10 years was not only the difficulty of not living up to my vows to my wife, was not being the father that I wanted to be. So when I got sober, so anyways, I took the trip. I went up there. They introduced me they told me you got to go to Prop 36. They let me do it out of county. So I went up to Fresno. That program was 3 days a week, 4 days a week for 3 months. It was once a week for 6 months. And then it was, I think, once a month for 3 months. And during that time, you know, if you do anything, you're going, because my option was either that or prison for 3 years. And so something scared me there, you know, something just shook me to the foundation, because I've been to jail a lot of times. Jail for me was only difficult the first time. I'm just scary at the age of 18, you know, what do I do? After that, you take a couple elevator rides up. It's not as bad as 3 and 5 day holds. One time I did 28 days. But I just didn't think that was for me. But I do remember going there the first day and asking the guy, how long is this? And he told me, and I told him, hey, I don't have time for this. I mean, I remember that specifically. I didn't have a job. I was living at my sister's house. I was on a borrowed bicycle. I had nothing but time. 40 years old, and I don't have time. And he's like, it reminded me of college, because he's like, I don't care if you come or not. It's no skin off my back. You know, you're the one going to jail or to prison. And that program introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and which I'm eternally grateful for. Because AA has saved my life. You know, meeting that sponsor has saved my life. I had one sponsor for like the first 9 months, but I was not being real honest, you know, and so we kind of drifted apart, and then I got a second sponsor. One of the great things about sponsors is if you find somebody that, I happen to like mine, and no, I mean that sincerely. I mean, we develop a relationship over time. But The best thing about it is, you know, what used to take us 2 hours to warm up when someone would say, hey, how are you doing? Right? Now we can warm up in about 10 minutes. Hey, how are you doing? Hey, you know, not bad. You know, because when he asks, hey, how are you? He doesn't mean how is the family, how is the dog, how is he? How are you? When I got the second sponsor, and he's here tonight, and I have three guys that came down with me, three good friends. Two of them were in my wedding, okay? One of them came a little later. I had a lot of people in my wedding. Hell, if he would have came earlier, you might be in the wedding too. You know, there was a couple of guys in there. What I was going to say is, you know, so in doing the steps, and you get to the fourth step, the first, I'm not going to go through them all, but, you know, I powerless over alcohol, my life is unmanageable. I mean, I had 40 years of going through, 28 years of going through that. I hadn't read a book in a long time. So when I read the book, my first book was given to me by my sister, who threw it on the counter when I was at her house, before I went to an AA meeting. And she said, you might want to read this. Because my brother-in-law, his mother has been in the program for 30 plus years. And I read that book. You know, I identified with that book. I identified with Bill. We were about the same age. I identified with the problem that they were talking about, you know, in the doctor's opinion, and more about alcoholism. Probably one of the things that grasped my attention more than anything else was there is a solution. Holy smokes. There's a solution to my problem. We've identified a problem, and now we have a solution. But in doing the fifth step, you know, because these words have come out so many times in my sobriety that it's so imperative. Because, you know, the fifth step was, you know, I don't know, it probably took 4 hours. We were on a golf course, you know. I don't think I was shooting that well. My experience with the fifth step is it's not rainbows and unicorns at the end, and I've never got this great butterfly feeling that, oh my God, you've just been everything. No, I get headaches, okay? Because it's like purging. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a whole bunch going on in it, and the guy is real thorough. And I'm not sure what I said the first 3 hours and 45 minutes, but I can tell you what I said at the last statement, because he looked at me and said, okay, is there anything else? And I thought, well, you know, I did smoke some weed about so much time ago. And the reason I say that is because there was that point of, now you're going to, I'm going to be honest. I had never been honest. I'd never been honest with you, with God, with myself, okay? This man doesn't care. He's doing this, well, he does care, but he's doing this because it's what he does. You know, that's what I've learned, that's what I'm supposed to do. You know, we pass it on. But somehow when I got honest, I was living that. I don't know if anybody else can relate to this, but, you know, when they say you're as sick as your secrets, you know, whether it was one day, one week, one month, one year, or now I have 11, during that time, I can be as sick as the secret that I want to hold on to. You know, and at that time, I was afraid I was going to drink. And the one thing I had, this is one benefit of getting here at 40 for me, okay, that I was sold that it wasn't good for me. And I'm sold today at 11 years that if I go back out and drink again, okay, and there's no guarantees that I won't tomorrow, okay. I'm trying to do the same thing I did today and yesterday and what got me here. Because I'm sold on the fact that if I did, my last experience says it took me 3 months to tear it down. And I think I would beat that. You know, I don't think from where I'm at to get from here to there would take that much time. And so when he said, is there anything else? I told him. I came clean. I told the truth. Okay? I told the truth. That was a weight lifted off my shoulders. I still didn't play golf any better that day, but it was still a weight lifted off my shoulders. And so we, you know, he gave me some direction. Because that's the other thing. You know, one alcoholic talking to another to remove my indifference so that I'll take action I don't yet believe in. I can tell you the action that I've taken in Alcoholics Anonymous, the the suggestions that I have thought were the stupidest, the dumbest, the non-relevant, okay, seems to be the ones that I fought the most, seems to be the one that have paid the biggest dividends. Okay? And what a blessing that was. And what a blessing that was. The gift of being desperate enough to be honest with another individual. You know, I don't know how else to say it. But it was really a blessing in my life. You know, I got a lot of character defects. I still got a lot, you know. Some of them, for some reason, I like to hold on to. Some of them I probably haven't even identified yet, you know. But trying to identify them and trying to ask, you know, for them to be removed has been, for me, a process. You know, sobriety, I heard one person one time call it slobriety. You know, it has not been a race for me. I wish it was a little quicker at times. Hell, I wish I would have got here a little quicker, okay? But I've always been hard-headed, and so change has been a little bit slow. The amends I had a little tough time with. You know, I really did. I've been a little tardy on some, is one way of putting it. I made my first amends to my stepfather. And when dealing with family, as I've found out, they were not really interested in the words that I was saying, because they had lived with my insanity for so long. What they wanted to see was action. So I remember going to him and saying, hey, there's some things I got to talk to you about. It was like I was 12 again. Okay? It was like I was 12 again, because he looked at me, that old Scottish man, and he said, are you sure you want to get into this right now? And I said the only things that came to my mind, hell no, I'm good. But what I showed him before his death, you know, a year and a half ago, was the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. What I showed him is what you people have showed me, you know, to try to do what I say I'm going to do when I say I'm going to do it. You know, to be where I say I'm going to be. You know, to take care of those boys, to, you know, to not call my mother and ask her, hey, can I borrow some more money without really having an intention of paying it back? And so that lightens, and I'm glad. He was never much for words, you know, but that still made it difficult on some of the, you know, and some of them, because my thing is I really never thought I harmed anybody. I mean, the most harm I ever did was to myself. I mean, if I harmed you, it's because we were in a situation that harm happens, okay? I mean, harm happens. And so I'm going to go my way, and you're going to go your way, and we're not going to get into this. But I've learned about those things that I can't get away from anymore, and they keep coming back, and they keep eating at me, you know? When Bill called and asked if I would come down here, and, you know, grateful, I said, absolutely, Bill. Thank you for the opportunity. I have a friend who I owed an amends to for, well, 20 years. But that amends, I mean, so part of it was financial. You know, let's get that clear. It's $2,500, right? But the guy did so much in being a friend as well. You know, and I got to tell you, the first 7 years, even of my 8, 9 of my sobriety, most of the shit I did to him was still his fault. It just was. Not only was it, but fuck you. And I don't mean to swear, but that's how I felt. You know, so sometimes I wonder, why didn't you go out and rush out and do this one earlier? Well, because it was in my head and it wasn't in my heart. You know, it's a long distance between these two sometimes for me. Because I like to rationalize things. I can give you 28 years of rationalization that I wasn't an alcoholic. Everything in my head. Up until the end, I can tell you before I got here that I thought I was real close to turning it around. After getting here and staying here a little while, I can tell you, I still don't know how close I was to my cheese sliding off my cracker. And I mean that with the utmost, you know, sincerity. I was out there. You know, I was not a well individual. And so to admit to myself that not only am I powerless, you know, but then you get into coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, if I believe that, then I have to believe I'm insane. And after I wrote out my first step and I could see my behavior, there was really not a whole lot to tell me that not my beliefs, but my behaviors were insane. What I've dealt with most of my life is there's always a conflict between my beliefs and my behaviors. You know, and kind of what AA is doing is kind of bringing those two in together, in harmony, where I can live within my own skin. Anyways, this friend called me last Tuesday. And I'm thinking, you know, I just celebrated a birthday last Friday. I'm coming down here. I really don't like public speaking. I've heard a lot of you speak, okay? Some of you speak. Some of you tell great stories. Some of you really grab my attention, okay? I have never grabbed my attention, you know? And I'm thinking, I got nothing to say, really? I mean, because I've had a lot of strange occurrences in my life in the last year. A lot of tragedy that I don't mind speaking to my sponsor about, you know, and getting direction. I don't, you know, I'm not one to air my stuff that is really outside of my hula hoop, but it's like real close to the one outside of that hula hoop, because I'm not necessarily causing it or directing it, but it still greatly affects me. So I'm thinking, I got nothing to say. Friend calls and says, hey, I'm coming up, the guy I owe an amends to, hey, I'm coming up next Wednesday. I'm passing through to go to Reno. You want to talk? I'm like, fuck, no. Not really. But often what I think, not really, always, you know, you do what you're supposed to do. I met with my sponsor, you know, he gave me some direction. I actually wrote out the amends. I actually read chapters 8 and 9, the steps, you know, and in there specifically says you should discuss this with somebody else first. And I did. We met on Sunday. Tuesday. We met on Tuesday before the meeting. Which is yesterday. And we went over it. He gave me some direction. You know? I went to then and made amends to the guy. Once again, I asked a stupid question. Is there anything else? He said, by the way, there is. The amazing part, what he reminded me of, and I'm not going to say it at a public level at this point in time. I've said it to my friends. I've said it to my sponsor. You know. What he said to me, and he was right, leads me to believe that one of those three guys can probably get up here and tell my story better than I can, because this was a huge chunk. It was a big deal. I'm like, oh yeah, that too. You know, I had the money that I owed him. And my sponsor suggested, you know, give him a portion of it, okay? And then make the last three payments. So that once, and make them over the next 3 months, so that every month for the next 3 months, you can remind yourself of what an ass you were. So I went to him and I told him my plan, and he said, hey, that's a great plan. However, I'm going to Mexico next week and I'd like all the money. So I gave him all the money, you know. Again, there wasn't rainbows and there wasn't unicorns. I didn't drive away from there thinking, wow, I feel real spiritual. I drove away there thinking, wow, I got less money in my pocket, a lot less money in my pocket today than I did like 5 hours ago. And as my sponsor would say, yeah, but it wasn't your money. It's not your money. Anyways, is that clock correct back there?
Yes.
Man, time goes fast up here. AA has saved my life. Getting a sponsor. Working the program out of the book. You know, the one-on-one has probably always been my most important. The current meditation I have a little hard time with sometimes, to be honest with you. That moment that, you know, we're going to take a minute of silence. Do you know how long a minute is? That's a long time. I listen to the fan. I listen to a couple of chairs, you know, clink together. I'm thinking, I opened my eyes one time, right? I think, wow, that's a long time. You know, and I've sponsored people because that's what we're supposed to do here. You know, that's what we're supposed to do here. Because I was told you cannot keep anything that you don't give away. Again, I'd like to welcome anybody who's new or fairly new. And I mean that sincerely. This program changed my life. It gave me an opportunity to be comfortable in my own skin with a lot of stuff that's going on. But I have not... See, I didn't really need a reason to take a drink before. I got a lot of reasons some days. In my mind, if I go to the old Robert, I don't do it. I go to meetings Tuesdays and Fridays. We go Thursdays and Sundays. My sponsor was always big on, still is. It's amazing. I don't know how he does it, but service. He's involved all the time. And I always thought, you know what? All I got to do is follow the guy. Just follow him. Do what he does. Go where he goes. Because he seems to be comfortable in his own skin. And there's a program of attraction. So I'm thinking, you know, I've always been grateful to get a job in AA. So if somebody asks you to do something, if somebody asks me, I don't know about you, if somebody asks me to do something, I'm going to do it. Because I don't want to go back out to the streets. Thank you.